Welcome to Pitch Perfect, a first-of-its-kind podcast series powered by Avayathon.
I'm Damini, your host for this incredible journey where we connect with thought leaders to discuss cutting-edge strategies and secrets to building a successful sales ready team. We are thrilled to launch our podcast series with Mr. Harsh Monga, the Director and Head of Sales Training at Dr. Reddy's,
a global pharmaceutical company committed to meeting unmet patient needs through innovative healthcare solutions. A quick introduction of Mr. Harsh Monga.
Harsh is a global leadership and executive coach, a certified OD specialist from TISS, a life member of Harvard Square, and also a member of International Coach Federation. Harsh has worked in many sectors like pharmaceutical, telecom, financial services, petroleum, ITITS, consulting, and many more, where he headed and turned around the training and development functions. Harsh is known in the training community not only as a master trainer, but also as a pioneer who stays ahead of the time by bringing in the best of practices and institutionalizing these for creating business impact. In this premiere episode, Harsh will share his insights on disrupting the sales training landscape. A very warm welcome to Pitch Perfect, sir. We are really excited to have you on our show.
Thank you so much, Damini. I'm equally excited to be on this show, and I'm very happy to be part of the first episode that you're airing.
Thank you so much. So we will have a Q&A segment where I'm going to ask you some questions and you can give me your insights on that. Are you ready?
Absolutely. Please go ahead.
Let's get started. So we live in an era where companies want immediate results, but customers are increasingly aware of the solution offerings. So my question to you is, how important is it for a sales team to believe in their product and build long-term customer relationships instead of being pushy and chasing immediate sales?
That's a very interesting question, Damini. And you know, there is something very unique in this question, which is actually very, very much related to our industry, the pharmaceutical industry. You know, we are the only industry, I think, where the customer is much more knowledgeable than the sales force. In most of the other industries, you will see that the reps are the product specialists. They are the ones who know the maximum about their product, and therefore it's their responsibility to educate the customers. In our case, it's different. The doctors who are our customers are basically and absolutely very well updated, and they are much more knowledgeable than the sales reps, you know, from our companies. Now, does that mean that, you know, the importance of product knowledge or knowing the product or the offerings and the key messaging goes down? No, absolutely not. On the contrary, what happens is that it becomes all the more important for a sales rep in a pharmaceutical industry to focus on continuous learning and to make sure that he or she is much more knowledgeable than the reps of other industries. Having a knowledge of, let's say, the 360 degree understanding of the customer profile, the practice of the doctor, the profession, the patients, you know, the environment in which the doctor operates, the customer operates, and the ultimate consumer. You know, all that becomes much more important. So I think I would say it is very important for the sales rep in any industry, but specifically in pharmaceutical industry, to be able to communicate the core messages around the brands that or the solutions or services that we have to propose to our customers. Nowadays, I think one more thing that needs to be kept in mind is brand reminders, you know, as we very fondly call it in our industry, they don't really work now. It's very important for a sales rep to engage the customer in a meaningful conversation. And that conversation becomes meaningful only when the conversation is about them, about the customers, about their customers who are the patients, and about their environment and their practice. So I think what becomes much more important in order to have a long-term customer relationship rather than being pushy or chasing immediate goals is to build that kind of a relationship, you know, which is not just about give and take, but there is a foundation of trust. If your relationship with the customer is all about getting prescriptions, is all about getting orders, then I think it is not really a relationship. It's just a transaction. So I think the sales reps need to really listen to what the customer is telling you and what the customer is not telling you. Where is the market going? All these things become very important for the sales reps to be able to actually have a meaningful relationship with the customers and have a win-win situation.
That's actually a really great answer. So moving on to the next question, that not everyone speaks the same language, and just like that, not every salesperson learns in the same style. So what can a training team do to create a personalized learning experience and bring out the best in each sales rep?
Yeah, I think you're right. Not everyone learns the same way, though they might be learning the same thing, You know, so I think most of the people who might be listening to this, if they are in training industry, they would understand different people have different learning styles. But I think the focus has to be on a holistic learning, and the focus has to be on addressing all the different learning styles. There are three things which are very important when it comes to learning: education, experience, and exposure. Now, education basically comes from the formal training that we provide, the sales training team or the training teams or the L&D teams they provide to the sales reps. But I think what is much more important than that is the exposure. And exposure comes from interacting with other people, learning from the peers, or from the on-job coaching and the guidance of their managers. But then where people learn the maximum is the experience, which is by actually working on the job, by experiencing, by going through those situations with their customers, by going through different projects, stretch assignments, and so forth. So the ATD also says this, you know, if you've heard about this 70-20-10 rule, you know, it says people learn more from experience, which is 70%, a little less, 20% from exposure, and just about 10% from formal education. Yet all three are important. And therefore, I say education, experience, and exposure are really critical. Keeping that in mind, the training has to have a blended approach. It cannot be that, you know, you just depend on one particular methodology, one particular method or tool or process of training people. So when we look at different learning styles of people, we try to have a blended approach, and we try to cater to all the learning styles of people, develop the content, the training interventions, and the experiences in such a way that the learning journey is based on addressing different learning styles of the people. I think another point here, when you ask me that how can a training team do create a unique learning experience or a personalized learning experience, is also by making sure that the TNI, the training need identification, is a very robust one. I think the baselining through competency assessments is very important to identify who needs what kind of inputs. And then you create cohorts of those people with similar training needs, with similar learning needs, and then you take them through those learning journeys. Last thing I think about this is between push and pull. You know, most of the time in functional training scenarios, in sales training scenarios, the focus is largely on push. The idea is that people need to be taken through a particular learning experience on a mandatory basis. You know, so there is a forced learning or training that happens. I think the training teams also need to focus on building pull. How can we create such learning experiences for our people that they are motivated to go through those learning journeys and they find value in those? And they will find value in the learning only if they are able to see results. But then for seeing the results, there is a responsibility on the sales team as well. They have to apply what they learn. So I think these are some of the points which can be kept in mind when we look at creating personalized learning journeys or experiences for our people.
Right. I actually loved your answer for that. And the point which I absolutely like was the education, exposure, and experience, how you explain that. So that is very applicable right now. And I believe that the people who are listening to us will be able to utilize these three and the various points that you have mentioned. So my next question to you is, you are known as a learning architect, a coaching evangelist, as well as a technology enthusiast. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for asking this question next, first of all. Yes, I am a learning architect and a coaching evangelist, as well as a technology enthusiast. And I think since you mentioned these three words, learning, coaching, and technology, I also want to sort of differentiate between these three. See, learning is the end outcome that we all want. It's about what the learner, what the sales rep, if you're talking about sales reps, what is he going out with? End of the learning intervention, what is he carrying with him? What is a takeaway? You know, so that's a learning, and that's an outcome that we want. Training or coaching or any other methodologies are basically, they're methodologies. You know, they are basically processes. They are basically means of imparting the learning that we want to provide to our learners. Technology, on the other hand, is basically just an enabling tool or a medium, I would say. So all three will go hand in hand. Learning, the end outcome, which will happen through the processes and methodologies like training and coaching. And of course, enabled by technology, of course. You know, and in fact, nowadays, in the new era, we see technology playing a very vital role in learning as well. So that's, I think, how these three things are, I would say, interconnected, not differentiated. In fact, I would say they are interconnected. In this journey that we have had, I've been with Dr. Reddy's now for the last 10 years. And I'm happy to tell you that we brought in e-learning 10 years ago. So we have been using technology in a big way. And we have been using technology not just for training people. We have been using technology as part of our recruitment process as well. We have been using technology as part of our FLM empowerment as well. We brought in mobile learning in 2018, actually. And one thing that I would like to highlight is that we brought in virtual training at Dr. Reddy's in 2019. Now, recently, all of us have gone through this pandemic, and most of the companies, I would say, have actually moved on overnight from classroom training to virtual training. But in our case, we were already prepared. We were ready because we had brought in virtual training 1 year before the pandemic hit us. So that was actually something which was, something which was very convenient for us to actually shift our remaining classroom training also to virtual training medium. And we were able to actually sort of make sure that learning does not get compromised in any way for our sales teams. And in fact, because of all this, I think we were very fortunate to have won the Global Best Employer of Brand Award 2020 for excellence in training. We have capability dashboards, which we have converted to online formats. So in case a line manager needs to give a feedback to the sales rep, that feedback goes into a capability dashboard online and the sales rep has access to that immediately. So that's a real-time feedback being provided. I think the point I'm trying to make here is that all these things, they need to be interconnected and they need to be leveraged in such a way that there is an impact on the performance and the business.
So, sir, first I would like to say congratulations for receiving such a prestigious award. And thank you for sharing this, because my next question is related to that how do you measure the effectiveness of a sales training program at Dr. Reddy's?
Well, this is a good question, I would say. And I will tell you in a short while why did I say this. But before that, let me sort of answer this question briefly in one line. And I would say outcomes are more important than outputs. One of my favorite slogans is that activity is not productivity. And for us, it's not just about how much of effort we are putting in terms of training our people. But for us, it is more about how much of impact are we able to create on people's performance and on the business. That's broadly the focus that we always like to keep. I think if we keep the training need identification right, then results are bound to come. However, my tip here would be to decide and agree on the objectives at the design stage itself. Many people make this mistake of running the training program and then later on struggling with demonstrating the impact or the effectiveness of those sales training programs. In our case, we make sure that at the design stage itself, we involve the stakeholders. We decide on what are the outcomes we are trying to achieve, how will we measure the success of this program, and this is all at the design stage before even rolling out the training program. So I think that's one thing that really helps us in making sure that the training is effective and the effectiveness of training is measurable as well. There are a lot of matrices. It's not just always the revenue or the sales numbers. The effectiveness can be measured in terms of whether we have been able to control the attrition. More importantly, the juvenile attrition. People who have joined us recently, we would like to control that attrition. It can be productivity measures. It can be the CSAT scores or the net promoter scores. All these matrices are there, but which one to use for measuring the effectiveness of a sales training program needs to be decided and agreed upon at the design stage itself. Last thing about this measuring the effectiveness of a sales training program, and I said I will come to this in a short while, is because there is this Kirkpatrick method of evaluation of effectiveness of training programs. It has four different levels, level 1, 2, 3, 4, and level, many people like to ask that how do we measure the effectiveness at level 4. I would say level 4 is very much like golf. And why do I say that is because golf is a sport which hardly anybody knows how to play it, but most people like to talk about it. In one of my interactions with the director of learning for GE at Crotonville, she also mentioned very clearly, saying that this is something that where GE also is struggling, and GE is known to be one of the best, I would say, cornerstone companies when it comes to training and learning. So the point here is, I think it's very important to measure the effectiveness, but it needs to be clear from the beginning what exactly is the outcome that we are expecting. And that's how we like to go ahead with measuring the effectiveness of a sales training program at Dr. Reddy's.
Yeah, so that absolutely makes sense, because there is not a single way where it is already pre-decided how it goes, but it can be pre-decided. So that perfectly makes sense. So sir, can you tell me about the concept of sales readiness and how are you planning to leverage it?
Sure. So sales readiness is, I would say, relatively a new entrant. While sales readiness as a concept is definitely not new, all that we have been doing is obviously a part of sales readiness. But I think as a sales enablement tool, or as fortified with technology, sales readiness is relatively a term which has gained importance recently. I think for sales reps to be effective, and you asked me this in the first question, for sales reps to be effective, it's not just enough to train them. Many a times we think that if we have trained them, then they should be able to perform better. But that's not really necessary. Salespeople not just need the training or the learning that they get through the training. They need to be able to practice those skills. They need real-time feedback on those skills. They need to have enough confidence to face the customers while they're applying that particular knowledge or skill that they've gained in training. And they need to go through the grind in order to become better. And I think all this, while people have been focusing largely on training the sales force, there has been an execution gap, or a coaching gap is what I would say. So therefore, sales readiness has now assumed a lot of importance. In brief, I think sales readiness is the ability to equip the salespeople with the knowledge and skills that they need to have meaningful conversations throughout the buyer's journey. I think that's something which is very, very important, and the salespeople should be able to have meaningful conversations. They should be able to pitch their products effectively, and they should be able to arrive at a win-win situation by virtue of whatever they do or say inside the clinic. And here comes a term that we use very commonly in pharmaceutical industry, is called in-clinic effectiveness, And that becomes, in pharmaceutical industry, in-clinic effectiveness is the key thing. You might have similar products, and you can obviously have a lot of talent, being recruited by your HR teams. But I think what is most important is what happens inside the clinic. Or in other words, in other industries, what happens face-to-face with the customer. And sales readiness is about improving the in-clinic effectiveness and the productivity of the sales reps. So I think that is something which is now becoming very important. Everyone, including us, we are realizing that this is something that we need to focus more and more on. So you also asked, where are we planning to leverage this? I think we started leveraging sales readiness in the newest form about 6 to 8 months back. And I think where we are using it currently is in upskilling and reskilling the people. And of course, the ongoing pandemic naturally was a very good scenario, though I don't want to use the word good related to the pandemic, but then it was a good scenario, or the apt scenario, for us to actually, experiment with it, and we benefited from it. But then there are many other situations many other use cases, I would say, for sales readiness. For example, new product launches, for example, certifications, assessments, even recruitment and progression within the organization. I think all these are use case scenarios for sales readiness. I think your podcast is called Pitch Perfect. To ensure that there is a uniform messaging being given by all the sales reps to your customers, and there is a uniform pitch, again, sales readiness is something which is going to be very, very key in bringing about that turnaround. So that's, I think, my take on sales readiness.
Right. So, sir, you have mentioned the term in-clinic effectiveness. I believe that it might be a new term for many people. And my follow-up question is actually related to that do you believe that sales readiness is impacting in-clinic effectiveness?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I will go to the extent of saying nothing else will improve the in-clinic effectiveness better than sales readiness. Training alone will not help. Like I said earlier, training is just one methodology of making sure that, or making the learning available or accessible to people. But I think it is the sales readiness, which is very, very important to improve the in-clinic effectiveness. Like I said earlier, you have the opportunity to practice. You have the opportunity for real-time feedback. You have the opportunity for going through the grind and garnering that confidence to be able to face your customer and to be able to pitch perfectly. Yes, we are seeing impact on the in-clinic effectiveness. Like I said, we started using the sales readiness to technology sometime back. We are getting very good feedback there. And I think the number of people who are now able to do it right the first time is going up. And that's something which is one of the key, benefits of sales readiness. That's one of the key outcomes I'm looking at, that my people, my salespeople should be able to do whatever they're expected to do. They should be able to do it better, or they should be able to do it right the first time. And that happens only when they go through this practice and they go through the sales readiness, offering that we have.
That's absolutely true. And even when we talk about the future, we do know that, technology is something which is constantly developing, and there is a lot of buzz about AI replacing many jobs, especially in jobs in sales. So what do you think, what kind of roles or tasks could AI possibly replace in the future?
Yeah, I think this is a ever ongoing debate, all the time. But I think it's just the fear of change. I don't think AI will replace all jobs or all the sales jobs. I don't really think so. Only those jobs which are repetitive, the jobs which are, mundane, or the jobs which are actually, in real sense, are the time wasters, for the sales reps as well as for the sales training teams, are the ones which will get replaced by AI. That is one. I think, in fact, I see a big advantage in using AI because it will help us make our people future fit. I think now it is important for any organization to become future fit. And in terms of upskilling people, in terms of reskilling people, it's very important for us to leverage all the technology which is available out there to make sure that people have an awesome learning and they have an improved effectiveness, with their customers. Rest, I think it's more about the fear, but it's more about adapting to the change. It's more about accepting the change. You think of, before the cars came in, the motor cars came in, think of, the only means of transportation at that point of time used to be horse carts, and when cars came in, those people lost their jobs, or livelihoods in some way. But you look at how many people the automobile industry employs today. You look at the example of, and I love this example, I always give this example when I talk about change management. There used to be a company, a camera company called Kodak. There was one point of time they were actually the leaders, but they didn't focus on digital photography. And now you would have seen that nowadays hardly anybody buys a camera, because the camera is in your phone, it's in your mobile phone. Now does that mean that people who lost jobs because the photography companies didn't do well, have they not found new jobs? They have. The only thing is they need to upskill themselves. They need to develop. They need to bring in newer skills, newer capabilities, and they have to look at the skills of future. So it's all about managing change. It's all about accepting that change. It's all about upskilling and reskilling yourself. But I don't really think AI will replace jobs. I would say AI will also end up creating a lot many new jobs, and therefore the options to people are going to be much more.
Right. And I actually wanted to highlight what you said, that with the example that you've given for Kodak, that change is something which is always required and you have to adapt yourself to the changes that are coming in. So that is equally applicable to how AI is working. So, sir, you have mentioned in your previous answer about, how, in Dr. Reddy's, your training process has changed due to pandemic. So how do you see it evolving in the future?
Yeah, sure. While the pandemic has changed the way we do so many things, not just training, and the whole world has experienced that. But I would also like to say that change is the only constant thing. If it was not the pandemic, something else would have changed in the environment. But then, of course, going back to the pandemic, since you asked about the pandemic, I think the training of the future, there are certain points that are here now. Virtual is here to stay, first thing. virtual training is here to stay. Earlier, we used to spend a lot of money, time, resources, energy in training people in the classrooms. And the entire training used to be practically 95% training, at least, used to be in the classrooms. Today, the entire training has moved to virtual. Even post-pandemic, once the things are back to the new normal, classroom training will come back, but it will be limited to very critical or complex topics only. The virtual training is here to stay. So that's one key thing that I see. That's how I see training evolving in the future. The second thing I think will be the involvement of line functions or the involvement of managers will be much more higher. I think the managers will take up that accountability and the ownership of being responsible for making sure that their teams are learning. And that's something which is going to be their key responsibility in terms of providing them the right learning opportunities, creating an environment in which people are able to apply their new learnings and providing them real-time feedback and on-job coaching. I think that's something which is going to be much and much more important now in the future. I think last thing which about the training of future will be training is now going to be more and more about in the moment. It's going to be more about learning in the flow of work. Josh Berson likes to use that term, though it was not coined by him. But I think that's very true. Learning in the flow of work has become very important. It's going to be even much more important because now people are dealing with multiple variables. They have a lot on their plate, you know, and therefore it's not so easy for people to spare, you know, a lot of time for formal training interventions. And therefore, they have to learn, you know, while they are working through different situations. And I think, therefore, some of the methodologies or some of the concepts like micro-learning, you know, will become very important. And then, of course, having engaging content, you know, that really shows value in terms of how people can apply, you know, in their day-to-day job, that's going to become very important. I think that's my take on how training will evolve in the future.
So, sir, as we have mentioned in the previous question that, you know, you are a coaching evangelist as well. So what are your thoughts on the role of technology in the field of coaching?
Sure. I think the one thing that technology will do to coaching is that it will bring in more enablement and accountability. The one-to-one coaching and coaching by humans for humans will never go away. But I think technology will play the role of an enabler. Like I said some time back, some of the tasks will become automated within the coaching process. And some of the things, some of the mundane, you know, processes will get automated, or technology will enable those processes in shorter period of time and maybe with more effectiveness. I think it will also bring in more accountability. So for a very layman, simple example would be if I'm today, when I'm coaching somebody, I'm taking notes, you know, on my paper with my hand. But then I think what we are starting now is that having those coaching notes available in the system online, which are also available or accessible to the coachee, to the client or to the sales rep himself or herself. And there's an action plan that you have there, which is also documented. I think that brings in more accountability as well. So I think the first point I would like to say is one thing that technology will definitely do to the field of coaching will be bring in more enablement and accountability. In terms of sales coaching and workplace coaching, I think, like I said, it will enable. The artificial intelligence is here to stay. So there will be a lot of shift in terms of having AI-enabled sales coaching. But I don't think it can totally replace the managerial guidance and the managerial intervention. So therefore, they will become complementary. As on today, we are totally dependent on the managers to coach their team members. I think AI will become an enabling tool there. It will assist the manager. The manager's part will be focused more on the critical aspects of the coaching and the coaching conversations as such. So that's, I think, the second point in terms of how technology will impact the field of coaching. I think it becomes very important, again, for coaches, all manager coaches and even external coaches to understand is that we need to continuously disrupt ourselves, you know. I think Peter Hawkins said this, disrupt yourself or someone else will. So disruption is a new norm. And that's something which is very, very important for all the enabling role holders to understand, whether it is traders or whether it is coaches, whether it is sales enablers or Salesforce Excellence role holders, everyone has to understand this, that this is how we need to move forward in the future. But I do see a big role being played by technology in the field of coaching. Like I said, it will be a role of an enabler. It will never replace the human part of the coaching.
Right. So basically, a perfect summarized like how the role of technology will be in the field of coaching, and the quote that you mentioned that you have to disrupt yourself, or you know, someone else will disrupt you. Basically, so you know, in that sense, I completely agree with you, and that actually brings me to my last question: that can you tell me three best tips to train effective salespeople?
So, it's difficult to think of and prioritize and say three best tips. But yeah, if you say what are some of the ways in which we can effectively train our sales teams, I think first thing about sales team training teams themselves, and especially for the training leaders, is that as a training leader, I'm doing two things. I'm running my training function, my business as usual, as on today, and I'm also focusing on transforming it. I have to keep thinking about what next. What do I need to do better? And what is it that I need to start doing? What new practice I need to bring in, you know, which will help me move my training function to the next level. So I think that's something which is very important for the training team and training leaders to keep thinking about. So that's one way I would say. And once we do that, then obviously our training becomes much more effective and we are able to cater to the learning needs of the sales teams much better. The second thing I would say is that it's very important to align and involve the stakeholders, especially business. Now, people might say this is common sense. You know, you need to align the stakeholders. Yes, you need to align, but you also need to involve them. And when I say involve them in the sense, involve them in the design, but not just design, but also involve them in delivery of the learning interventions. I strongly believe that there has to be a joint ownership for the learning outcomes between the business and the training function. And that's very important because the business also needs to meet training halfway. You know, one side should not be doing all the heavy lifting all the time. It's very important, and therefore business needs to take that accountability and joint ownership for the training outcomes or the learning outcomes as well. So aligning and involving the stakeholders in the whole training process, end-to-end training process, that's also something which is, I would say, very important for having an effective training function or intervention for the sales teams. And I would like to close this, you know, again, a quote from Peter Hawkins, who said, a major challenge lies, you know, not in the parts of an organization, but it lies in the interconnections. And I think all the different functions, different parts of the organization coming together and looking at it as a joint ownership, looking at it as a joint accountability, as a shared accountability, and taking responsibility for learning of everyone in the organization, that's something which is key, you know, to having effective sales training function. I think that's what is going to be really important.
Thank you for sharing the tips. I hope that the listeners who are currently tuned in will be utilizing the tips that you have shared. So, sir, now we are moving on to our next segment. So, we have an underrated, overrated segment. So, I want you to name one underrated sales tech tool and one overrated sales tech tool according to you.
Okay. So, there are a lot many sales tech tools out there. You know, I think one of the overrated sales tech tools, actually, there are a couple. So, CRM is one. You know, I think... many a times we get so absorbed, you know, and as an organization, maybe to try to build more and more robust CRM tools that we forget that, you know, it's actually the person on the ground who's actually going to be running that, you know, who's actually going to be, you know, engaging with the client. And therefore, that capability is much more important. Rest of the things are just enabling them. Another thing in terms of sales tech tools, specifically when you ask, I think one more thing which is quite overrated is the gamification. And, you know, it has different ways in which you can use the gaming elements or the gamification or serious games. And I'm here referring to the serious games that are built in. There was a time when, you know, everybody, all companies were talking about, you know, having learning through games, and people built games, you know, like Temple Run and other such similar games where people will learn. But what they realized later on was that it takes too much of effort, resource, money, time, and push to actually get people involved there, to get people, you know, pick up those things and learn from those things. And the ROI is always questionable from there. So today, if you see, in most cases, the gamification is now reduced to leaderboards. And I think that is something which is working well. But I think at that point of time, it was quite highly overrated, I would say. In terms of underrated sales tech tool, I think so. As on today, yes, AI is one. I definitely believe that artificial intelligence is still underrated. It is just in its nascent form at this point of time. We need to leverage it more and more. And another thing that I would say, which is a little underrated today, is also the videos. I think the most people are nowadays in the pandemic, for example, and even otherwise in the different e-learning platforms have started using videos. But there's a lot of distance to be covered there. There are a lot many ways in which we can use videos. Videos should not be just about somebody standing and talking and the learner just listening to that person. You know, it has to be very engaging. It has to be interactive. And I think there is some distance there to be covered. But I think I would say video is one of the best means of training people. And I would say it is still underrated, therefore.
Right. That's a really good answer that you have given here. I completely agree with you with the tools that you have explained. So that actually brings me to the end of the podcast. So thank you so much for giving your valuable time for this interview. I absolutely loved all your answers. And all our listeners will have gained a lot of insights and knowledge and with the conversation that we had. So your insights have been really invaluable. So thank you so much for joining.
Thanks a lot, Damini, for having me on your show. And I think this is something that is very good that you have started. And I wish you all the best. Also, I would wish, and a happy new year to all the listeners. Everyone, please stay safe and take care.
Thanks so much, sir. So, everybody, that was Mr. Harsh Monga. Thank you for tuning in to our very first episode. Hope you found this valuable. The Pitch Perfect podcast series will keep bringing in visionary thought leaders in the hope of creating a community of sales perspectives. If you found the show insightful, I would appreciate if you follow us and never miss an episode. We will be back with another episode at the same time. This is your host, Bam Lee, signing off.